you know, being a bootstrap company, we've had some cool opportunities that came to us where we signed, you know, two, what I would say is like very large perpetual licensing deals, like non-exclusive perpetual licensing deals, which is basically like these companies get like, basically it's like you hand over your code base to them and then, but it's not exclusive. And like, you still own all your customers and all your other revenue. They just have the ability to now kind of like build this into their own product. And then you just kind of tell you to go away.
One characteristic emerged as a significant predictor of success. It was grit.
All right, we are back and we have a special guest this week in Derek Homan, the co-founder of Median and a new product called Workshop. Hey, Derek.
Hey, how's it going?
Glad Pretty to be good. Here. Yeah. We've talked off and on a little bit for maybe like the last, 9 months or so. And I've been wanting to get you on because you guys have a very similar business to us and that you kind of have, and correct me if I'm wrong, but it's just you and your co-founder, correct?
Yeah, it's we're a two-person bootstrap startup. And it's funny because I think the first time we talked, we chatted with each other and we were like, wow, we have a lot in common. You were just like running a very similar businesses, just, you know, hundreds of miles apart.
Exactly. Yeah. So you're in Nebraska, right? Omaha?
Yeah. The bustling tech metropolis that is Omaha, Nebraska.
Well, nowadays, like, it seems like everybody's, or at least like the big topic of conversation is, you know, are all these people going to start moving out to these, you know, places that typically don't have big tech metropolises? And I assume they are.
It'll be interesting. I mean, I always joke that like, you know, my wife's a developer and she works for a company here in Omaha, but I always said, hey, if things don't work out there, you can always get a, you know, a remote job for a Bay Area company, but still live in Omaha and have the cost of living be significantly lower. And, you know, they pay you less than a Bay Area salary, but significantly more than you'd make here. And we kind of that arbitrage kind of works out in our favor. So yeah, it'll be interesting to kind of see how that stuff shakes out in the next, you know, a year from now. Is that everyone's going to be either a hybrid or remote company, or, you know, who knows?
Exactly. Yeah. We would live in Atlanta, which is obviously a fairly big city, and it's getting more and more expensive to live here. And I've had thought, like, ever since this all started happening and just sort of figuring that we're probably going to be in some sort of state similar to this for the next, year and a half. Like, we'll see what happens. But I was like, man, it would be nice to like move to, you know, like Greenville, South Carolina or something like that, where it's so much cheaper. And it's like, like we can't go out and like go out to eat and like hang out with friends anyway. So like, why don't we just move somewhere like that? But my parents are so close by, and that's kind of what keeps us here, is just having them close by. And, you know, we have a 2-year-old, so we don't want to like spread them out too much. And they also help a ton with like babysitting and whatnot, which is like the most valuable piece.
Yes, I'm super aware. My parents are the same way and are also here. And it's like moving away and taking away that, like, honestly, that luxury you have is like, that's like it's like a very life-changing thing in a not positive way, when you can just kind of like hand them off to the grandparents and have a little bit of, you know, time for just you and your significant other.
Yes. That is very important. So we were, you know, when we say our businesses are similar, they're like very, very similar. So we, for those that have listened to the podcast, we have two SaaS products, really just one business, but two SaaS products. So we have UserFeed and AdReform. And then you guys, you have Median, which is a co-browsing tool, if I'm saying that correctly. I'll let you go into that a little bit more in a minute. But you guys have also, like, currently you have a new product that you're coming out with called Workshop. But you've also, like, I know you've dabbled in sort of trying to build other businesses as well, along with Median in the past, which is kind of something we've done too. So it's sort of like you have your core business that makes, you know, pays most of the bills, right? And then you know, you have your other time that you're trying to kind of build that next thing, or maybe something you feel has like a bit higher kind of potential, or moonshot potential, I guess you could say. I've always wanted to get on a call with you and kind of talk shop and find out more about how you guys are doing that, running multiple SaaS businesses, and you guys have had some success. So I definitely want to get into that. But yeah, before we go into your current SaaS products. Tell me a little bit about your background, your career, and sort of how you got into starting your own businesses.
Yeah, sure. And it's kind of an interesting story. So I lived in Omaha, have lived in Omaha my entire life, and I always had kind of an interest in tech from the get-go, but I never had an interest in writing code or anything like that. And I've always kind of dabbled and am just the world's worst developer. But I had interest in, like, you know, tech and kind of how it can open doors and change things. And so pretty early on, my first job out of college, I was a recruiter actually for a staffing firm, and I did IT recruiting. So I was kind of involved with a lot of folks that were developers and things like that. But, I generally didn't like it. I think I was reasonably good at it, but we worked with a lot of just like really terrible companies, and convincing people to go work at companies that you would never work at yourself was not my jam. And, pretty early on then, actually after that, a year or so after I started that, LinkedIn, was opening an office in Omaha, strangely enough. And they had, some of the founders were former PayPal guys, and they opened a big PayPal office here as well. And so I was kind of determined to get my foot in the door one way or another, because there just weren't a lot of other opportunities to work in tech, and especially as a non-developer. And so this is 2008. And early on, I just started working with working at LinkedIn. I interviewed and got the job, and you know, I took a pay cut and to go work there. And it's a big customer support office, but at that time, it was only 30 people or less in Omaha, and then there were only 285-ish people at the company when I started. And then mm-hmm. I was at LinkedIn for 8 years, and I kind of took a customer support job to kind of just get my foot in the door, and then I kind of found out that I actually really just liked it. Right. And so then over the years, I kind of moved up and worked with the product team, working on customer support products, and then managed a couple of teams. And so I was there for 8 years, and I saw the growth went from 285 people to 9,000 when I left. So it was just like insane growth. And it was, you know, the IPO happened, and mm-hmm. that was crazy, and all this other stuff. And then after that, I joined a smaller startup here in Omaha, again, another tech company called Flywheel, which is a managed WordPress hosting company. And they were about 30 people. They were hiring their first manager. I had overseen customer support teams for LinkedIn and across, you know, various countries. And so I joined there as the first director of customer support to kind of bring them to 24/7 customer support. But I always had the intention of like starting a company. I just kind of needed, like, I felt like I needed to have a little more experience, like, and like needed mm-hmm. to kind of understand what like it was like at the really early stage for right. me to feel like I had some level of potential for success. And while I was there, I met my current co-founder, Ben Stevenson. And we just really hit it off. He's an awesome guy. He's a developer. And when mm-hmm. I had my daughter, when I was on paternity leave, we were just getting drinks one night and kind of talking about what we ultimately wanted to do. We both wanted to start companies, and we just kind of talked about different things that we had that would be interesting to, we had so many bad ideas, by the way. It was just like, it was ridiculous. And we kind of came back to this idea that I would have with the customer support teams of just being able to view and kind of interact with what people are seeing on their accounts while you're talking to them. Mm-hmm. And there was this kind of, I'm condensing this down, but essentially we kind of settled on, one, we were going to start a company. We started building it kind of nights and weekends. And then when we decided to go for it, we were like, what's a really niche thing we could do as a bootstrap company that is just kind of differentiated a little bit? It's not, you know, going to be the, you know, $100 billion market, but we can kind of carve out our something for ourselves there. And we kind of settled on this co-browsing thing, which is, I always describe it as kind of like lightweight screen sharing. It's like you can click a button and see and view and interact with what somebody's doing on your website at any given time. And it pairs pretty well with like live chat companies and in some contact center companies. And so really early on, I think how we even first started talking was we built an app for Intercom and we're an add-on there. And so we started that was about 3 years ago, and we've been kind of going at it ever since. And then, like you mentioned, we've kind of, you know, after we got some good customers there, we kind of started toiling around with some other ideas that we were just like, you know, like bigger ideas or just kind of fun ideas, because we had kind of this consistent thing that made money every month. And mm-hmm. it kind of afforded us a lot of ability to kind of you know, build and try some new stuff. And then more recently, we started a new company. Actually, have another person who's helping us with it as well, which is called Workshop. It's actually outside of the customer support space, and we can talk about it a little bit more later. But but we're kind of focused on, you know, making meetings more productive and actionable, and you know, how do you actually make sure a meeting, you walk out of it and have kind of like 3 to 5 things that actually happened? Like you should have those meetings where you walk out of and you're like, what was even decided, and mm-hmm. who's doing what? So that's kind of what we've been working on lately.
Yeah, I love that. Yeah, as a former, I guess I'm still in sales technically as a founder, but
me too.
My background's in sales. So, you know, you're having tons of calls and meetings every day, mostly with customers, and like 99% of those have some sort of follow-up or that's kind of on you to go take care of. So it's like having some sort of agenda at the end of a meeting that you can easily use in a follow-up with that customer. I imagine that's some of what you guys will be adding to the product if it's not already there yet.
And we're in closed beta right now. So I wouldn't say closed beta. We have a list that we're compiling and as we're building the product. But those are the sorts of things. It's like, what's like the single source of truth of what we kind of all agreed on we were doing in that meeting? And if we ever need to reference it back, we can just, you know, click on a link within that calendar invite that was sent and just see. So like there's no gray area. Everyone knows like what was decided, or at least what was documented was decided.
Yep. Well, so I didn't realize you guys had like started Median as purely in like kind of like an intercom app. Did I get that right from what you said?
Yeah. Well, we were trying to build it as an add-on for a lot of different like kind of chat and messaging providers. Intercom mm-hmm. was the very first one, just because they were kind of getting their app store off the ground.
Yep.
But we eventually built integrations with like Live Chat and Zendesk and some other folks as well.
Gotcha. So how did you guys go about, I mean, there's probably a lot of people that are listening, a lot of bootstrappers, I feel like, are trying to carve off, you know, a niche, right? And a lot of times an easy way to carve off a niche is to jump on top of another platform, whether it's Intercom or Slack, Salesforce, there's a bunch of them, Shopify, obviously. How did you guys market that? And do you feel like you were having enough success through that app store to really kind of grow the business?
Yeah. I mean, for us, when you have zero customers, we're like, how do we get to like 10 customers even? And so for us, we were just like, you know, I think we were trying to figure out like what is something that's like growing like reasonably quickly that we mm-hmm. could potentially just kind of like latch onto. And because like, you know, our sales and marketing budget was essentially zero. And if we could find a way to get some more exposure than we could just kind of on our own, that would be beneficial. And so, I think I had listened to a lot of podcasts or read a lot of things that kind of talked about, like, you know, being part of an ecosystem really helps. And I think, like historically, like the Salesforce, like AppExchange has like, you know, entire companies are built on there, and they obviously have a gigantic user base. Yep. And so like Intercom was like, their app store at that point was like very new, and there wasn't a lot of competition. Mm-hmm. And so we're like, oh, this is like a great place to be. And I'd say like very early on, I like cold emailed Des Trainer, and we were in Chicago, and he like just said like he was there too. And he was just like, hey, like come meet and hang out. And so we just hung out with Des for like an hour, and he was just an incredibly nice guy. And so we're like, well, all right, let's do it. He didn't know that we pushed our site live like 15 minutes before we met with him. And we're like, yeah, totally. We're definitely not this rinky dink company at all. We're great. And he's like, no, one, you are, but that's fine. Cause everyone starts somewhere. We were a rinky dink company like 3 years ago. And he was just an awesome dude. And so it was a great place to start for us to kind of get exposure. And they were really cool about just kind of, talking about our product a little bit, because like it's in their best interest too to have things mm-hmm. that like maybe they're not going to build, but some subset of their customers will find interesting. And so because there weren't thousands of apps in it, and there were only, you know, 20 or 30 or 50 or whatever, it was kind of easier for us to carve that out early on as opposed to like other larger app stores where there maybe were thousands.
Yeah, we felt the same way. I mean, I feel like we started UserFeed, and it was right about the time, like they had an app store, but it wasn't really like, I feel like they weren't really like advertising it much, right? It wasn't really the app store of today. Like it was sort of like, we have some, here's our integrations list or whatever. And they had just, they were just releasing the Messenger home, like business Messenger home, where you could add apps to your, basically like the Messenger. So that was like a big reason. That was also another big reason that we went with that. But the main reason, of course, is to be able to jump onto their, you know, their customer base, which is obviously huge and growing. But yeah, that's super interesting. So you came from LinkedIn, which obviously had raised a ton of money and grew super fast and was this big, you know, monster unicorn company success story. So why did you decide to bootstrap if, you know, your experience had been sort of like from companies that obviously didn't necessarily do that? You know, I definitely find it interesting that you jumped into the bootstrap world, which is, you know, what we obviously did as well. But I'd love to hear more about why you decided to do that.
Yeah, it's interesting. Both LinkedIn raised a ton of money, and Flywheel raised money too. And they were acquired last year as well. And so we kind of went the opposite path. And I think part of it was we had some at least okay awareness that the thing that we had kind of settled on what we wanted to build wasn't going to be like, if you're a VC, you probably want to have some, you know, 100x return or nothing. It's kind of like go big or go home. And for us, we were like, you know, if we can get this, you know, to, you know, pay salaries for ourselves and that's it, we'd be pretty excited about that. There's just something about working for yourself and, you know, being your own boss that we're excited about. We obviously had ambitions more than just that. But if worst case scenario, we could pay ourselves even, you know, livable salaries, that seemed appealing. And so when we kind of settled on this and that was what we wanted to build, I think we, you know, we had explored the route of like some ways of doing like either small investment or other things. But, you know, we had kind of like game planned and budgeted for like not taking salaries for a while and these other things. And also it just like afforded us the ability to be exceptionally flexible with like what we wanted to do with the company, since we only had to answer to ourselves. I think, you know, it could be a double-edged sword too, right? It's like, if no one's, sometimes it's good to have somebody to push you and do those sorts of things. And I think we could have benefited from that sometimes, but it's also really nice to, you know, I think we signed some deals later on more recently that we never would have signed if we would have ever taken outside money, but they were extremely great for us personally. But it was just like, you know, that was the trade-off, right? It's like a niche company that can carve out its own, you know, little foothold. And that's kind of what we were, I think, pretty conscious of that early on. It was like, that's what the company is going to be. That's what the product is going to be. And there's nothing to say that like 3 years down the road, if we were, you know, something caught fire that we're like, we could just raise money later if we wanted to, like, there's no, you have to raise money or not. For us, it was like, we're not going to right away. And then if there's a huge pent up demand that we just kind of stumbled upon, then we can go that route. For us, it was just completely about optionality.
Yeah. It's one of those things where it's, well, like, for example, I mean, you have, similar to us, you have sort of a core product that pays the bills, and then, oh, well, we kind of want to work on something different as well and like launch that. And it's, you know, you raise money, any amount of money, and that becomes a really tough conversation to have when you have somebody else in your inner circle that has ownership in the business that you now have to go to and say, hey, we actually kind of want to work on this other idea alongside of what we're doing. Like, that doesn't go, that's not going to go well, right? So
you're like, what about the thing I invested in? Shouldn't you work on that? And you're like, well, probably, but I don't want to.
Exactly.
I don't think that flies as well.
Yeah. And I mean, it's just like, when I think of, I mean, all of what's happened in the last, you know, 4 or 5 months with COVID and all these things, you know, obviously it was very difficult for us to build up the company to where it's at today. But the fact that we got there and we had this profitable business that sort of, you know, it's reoccurring and it just sort of like run kind of very much so like runs on its own. Like, we could literally just like sneak out for a week or two and like nothing would really change and we'd still be making the, you know, the same money's coming through the door. Like, that is such a, there's just something amazing. Like, that's such an amazing feeling that's very different from where if you're a sales rep or a sales manager or any other position where it's just like every day you got to like come to play and you have to, you know, every, you had a great month. Well, it all just started back at zero and you got to do it again and you got to do it again and over and over and over this grind to just be able to get to that point where you have that sort of, that freeing feeling of both optionality and I'm making money technically in my sleep and it's going to keep coming back through the door. Like it's just it's an amazing feeling. And like Tyler at Earnest is always talking about how it's the new American dream type of thing.
Oh,
right?
Yeah.
And it totally is for people that I guess are in the software world. It's the new American dream, but no, that's super interesting.
I'll say one other thing I like too is from a motivating factor is like, if you can sell one subscription or one anything, it's like, oh, that money goes like it's different than like a commission for like a salesperson where it's like, oh, you get, 5 or 10 or 20% or whatever your commission structure is. And I'm like, well, 100% of that, that sale goes to the company, which is owned 50-50 by myself and my partner. So it's like, it's like that money goes directly into my pocket, one of my pockets, whether it's the business account or eventually getting paid out in like a dividend or through my salary. And so it's like, it just feels like you're even more motivated because any like good thing that comes out of it is like directly impacts you. Whereas, a larger company where there's other things to pay for, it's like, oh, cool. If you're a salesperson, you're like, I signed a $1 million deal and like, you might get, some much smaller percentage of that. Whereas like, it's like, if we signed a $1 million deal, it's like, oh, like other than what the government takes for taxes, that's ours. And so that's, that's a nice little motivator too.
For sure. And it also like, as you get into bigger, opportunity, like bigger sales opportunities, with maybe like larger companies, enterprise type deals, it really gives you a lot of, there's a lot in your court in terms of negotiations. So we've talked about this a little bit on the podcast, but like we go into some big deal and they're just, trying to whittle the price down. It's like, well, okay, fine. Like, I don't need this deal, like I'm not trying to hit. A lot of people try to use the same tactics they use with other companies where they'll really try to like wait till the end of the month or the end of the quarter and try to like pull us down. I'm like, I don't care if it goes till next quarter. Like, what do I have? Yeah. Like, we're doing fine. Like I don't have a quota. And sometimes when they're being really ridiculous with it, like I will literally say that to them. I'm like, I'm the co-founder. I don't have any quota to hit. Like, we're not going to lower the price for no reason here at the end of the quarter. Like they're really trying to get that down. So it definitely helped you in that court too.
Yeah. The standard tactics like are a little bit different and you have the ultimate flexibility. Like if one day someone's like, hey, like we would do this, and it would be like way less than you would charge, or like you have the ability to like do something custom. Like you don't need to answer or you don't need to ask anybody. You can just like say yes or no, because you know how much of a pain in the butt it's going to be if you agree to that. And I always joke too that like our org structure, there's only two of us. So it was just like myself and then Ben, and it was just like arrows pointing to each other. And that's like our org structure. And so that, it's like, there's only two people to make decisions, and it's either me or Ben. And like I always joke that Ben is my boss and I am Ben's boss. And so, it definitely gives a lot of flexibility. Now on, the flip side, it's, it'd be nice to have some extra support with, some of the more mundane things or things that you're not terribly good at. So, it comes with trade-offs, but I value flexibility quite a bit, and I don't think there's anything you can do to beat that.
Yeah. There's definitely things that are, definitely cons to it, but yeah, like you said, like the flexibility optionality of it is just good enough to sort of surpass those downsides. My wife works at a publicly traded company, and there's definitely some pros to that in terms of like pay and like different things here and there, but she's on calls all day long. Like, there's definitely cons to it, right? For me not to have to be on calls all day and just be able to run the business is a great, great feeling. So, So I guess going back to Median and Workshop, like how did you come up with these ideas, or like where did these ideas come from? How do you guys decide which projects you're going to work on and which ones, you know, obviously you're not going to work on.
Yeah. Median was kind of interesting. It was a little bit easier for us to kind of decide on this. So, you know, I had 10 years of working in customer support and running customer support teams, and both at LinkedIn and at Flywheel, we very consistently, you would have to try and figure out what the customer is actually doing, and they would use different verbiage than what you would call things. And it was kind of hard to get on the same page. And a lot of people would have, a lot of companies would have some sort of feature where you can like shadow a user or like become a user and kind of like log in and see some version of what their instance is. Although there's some security concerns there, and you have to kind of do all these other things to make sure you're compliant and make sure that you're not able to access too much information. Only certain people can have it. And so that was always like a bit of a struggle, especially if you're, you know, emailing back and forth. Like it's hard to see what they're even doing. Like if they call something the wrong thing, they may say, you know, I'm going to the settings page, and they're going to the, you know, like the account settings page as opposed to your, you know, email settings page or something. And you right. just don't know. And so I always kind of was like, it'd be just nice if we could just see what they're seeing. And, you know, screen yeah. sharing exists, but I always just felt really like heavy-handed for a lightweight kind of more transactional conversation. And so when we just kind of were exploring, like co-browsing was like a version of kind of like becoming a user, but you know, you could ask the user to like consent to it. And you could also, you know, kind of handhold them through it and give them kind of white glove service. So you could kind of, you know, solve the problem in a quick way, but also do it in a way that provided like a really high level of customer satisfaction. And so like, you know, we didn't invent co-browsing, but there weren't a lot out there that were kind of more modern. A lot of them were like very enterprise focused.
Yep.
So we kind of focused on that. And then, and the workshop more recently, is an interesting story because we kind of like started working on it during the, you know, kind of lockdown, in like when COVID started hitting. We originally started talking about building just like a fun little side project that would integrate with like Zoom and be kind of like a Zoom overlay with like agendas for meetings and stuff. And we thought it'd be kind of a fun little thing, like throw on Product Hunt that people would find interesting, and we weren't going to charge for it or do anything like that. And then as we kind of started talking more about it, and we started talking to some of our, you know, friends who are in the space who also run companies, we kind of were like, oh, we might actually be able to build something much more meaningful there. And because like people hate meetings, and I'm definitely one of those people. Yep. And there's definitely a lot of things you can do to kind of solve for that and make it a lot better. And as we kind of just started trying to like figure out what are like the biggest problems with meetings and why do people hate them so much? I mean, the material actually, you know, wrote itself, because it's pretty easy to see why a lot of people hate meetings. And me being one of the people who hates meetings, it was like, oh, we can actually solve a lot of this with software. And so, you know, we started kind of doing that as we had, I'd say some more time on our hands, because we weren't leaving the house. And so we started kind of poking around and building this stuff on kind of like nights and weekends. And so we've been building that for the last, you know, several months, and have some folks on the couple of really cool companies on the wait list that have kind of signed up for a pilot already, which I think we're going to start hopefully in mid to late August. I'm going to knock on wood with that timeline. But we kind of uncovered a little bit of like pent up demand for people like being frustrated with meetings, and like people are at least out there looking for like how to make them less crappy. And when we kind of like talked about the problem, I was, you know, in some ways I'm kind of like, man, maybe this is what it should have felt like at the beginning of Median when we were talking about it, because like people, like my parents don't know what Median does really. They're just like, oh, it's like you do some internet stuff. And then, you know, I explained workshop to my dad, and I'm like, oh, like, you know, you can create agendas where you can have pre-reads, and you know, you do all the note-taking, and it's all attached directly to your calendar. It'll automatically append your Zoom recordings at the end, so it's like a single source of truth of everything that actually happened in the meeting. And my dad gets it immediately. My dad's like, oh, I've been in meetings before, I get it. And so in some ways we were kind of like, oh, you know, it's kind of a fun project to go after. And there's definitely some pent-up demand for like fixing meetings, especially as people are on Zoom calls 8 hours a day now.
Well, yeah, there's definitely, I mean, there's a gap, right? Like the last, I'd say 5 years, the meeting category has like exploded, right? So obviously you have the front of the meeting, which is usually Calendly or something like Calendly. Mm-hmm. And Calendly is like just absolutely insane growth. But they, so you got Calendly scheduling it. And then there's sort of a gap there between scheduling and the actual meeting itself. Like, what are we talking about? What's the agenda? Like, what's going to happen here, right? And then you have the meeting on Zoom or something like Zoom, which is obviously Zoom is doing not too bad. And then
my best stock pick of the last 10 years, by the way, and it was had nothing to do with coronavirus. I just thought it was a good company. And turns out I look like the world's greatest stock trader, and we'll ignore all the other ones I lost money on. But I only talked
about that. Yeah, no, we same here. Like we were working with, I guess, JP Morgan, and they actually ran that IPO. So I got in like at the how they distinguish that, but whenever JP Morgan can sell some of the shares initially, like right at IPO, that's the price, man. We got it at like $36 or something.
You're way better than me. You're a better investor than me. Well, until you just said you sold it.
Well, I sold it at, I think, I don't remember what it was. I want to say it was like, it was too early. It was like, it was high. It was like 170 or something like that. Obviously it's gone up quite a bit, but I still, you know, you take your profits where you can get them. You're not going to get the best win there, but
it sounds like you did pretty good still. I'm not.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you still have yours, or have you sold it yet?
I do still have mine. I bought mine mid-January, January 15th-ish or so.
Okay.
And I actually bought it because I thought Zoom Phone was going to make it really easy for them to sell more into contact centers and all this other stuff. And then, you know, coronavirus happens, and then it just starts exploding for reasons that, you know, had nothing to do with my investment thesis, I guess. Yep. If you could call it that. And so it's more just like I got extremely lucky in the timing, but I actually do think it had a lot of long-term value. Mm-hmm. Anyway, and you know, a lot of these things just kind of like will happen and have short-term spikes and that sort of thing. But you know, I'll hold on to it for quite a while anyway. And just, you know, there's short-term, and long-term capital gains tax that you need to, you know, figure out.
Yeah, they have great like metrics. Like it's only going to keep. It's a real business, right? This isn't like some fake like bubble Silicon Valley business. Like they have amazing metrics that keep getting better. So yeah, that's a good, I've gotten very, very lucky during all of this, which is, I kind of feel bad, right? Cause it's like during like a horrible time, but like the two stocks that I had the most of were Zoom and obviously Twilio through my wife, who gets them at a very good price.
I also own Twilio stock, and they've been fantastic. I'm jealous of, you know, probably the employee stock purchase plans and the things that you probably get to benefit from. But it's just a great company in general.
For sure. Again, another company that's like, it's not a bubble, right? Like they have legitimate metrics and it's like a really good business, but it just happened to be escalated through, you know, through all this. But anyways, off topic. So, okay. So you've got Calendly scheduling meetings at the beginning. You have that gap for like the agenda prior to the meeting. Then you have Zoom and those kind of companies. And then there's another gap after the meeting, right? So I'm assuming where you guys are fitting are those two gaps.
Yeah. And I'd say like, you know, kind of, that's definitely for sure where we're at. Cause like, I think, you know, a big part of meetings and why they aren't successful a lot of times is, you know, people don't even just plan for them. Like the meeting organizer will just throw a calendar link on the schedule and just like invite some people. And then that meeting organizer might know what the meeting is about, but like the other folks there like only kind of know what the meeting is about, and they don't necessarily know what questions need to be answered during it and what the actual output needs to be. And so, you know, we're doing some things like, how do we make it as lightweight and easy as possible for someone who maybe isn't as like type A, who will create meeting agendas for everything? Like, how do we make it easy for them to create agendas? Mm-hmm. Because that's like the game plan of the meeting, right? Like, and if I'm an attendee of a meeting and I know what's going to be in there, I can kind of like already start my mind working towards, you know, like my thoughts or feedback on the different things we're going to talk about. And you're just a lot more productive as a participant in a meeting if you actually have an agenda already. And then during the meeting, you know, like documenting what's actually going on is really important. And so for us, you know, we have, you know, kind of Google Docs-esque multiplayer note-taking, where multiple people can take notes at the same time. you know, we can create, you know, like Asana tasks and, you know, Trello tasks and, you know, Jira issues and all that stuff all within the note-taking tool itself. And yep. then kind of afterwards, it's like the meeting minutes and the actions of what was decided upon during the meeting, like automatically gets messaged out to everyone and kind of the follow-up action items and that sort of thing. And there's kind of a lightweight to-do list that's in part of it. But like after the meeting, it's like, hey, here's the Cliff Notes version of like what actually happened. Like yep. if you only had 15 seconds to look at the highlights of this and wanted to get a like fully capture what happened in that last hour, you should be able to do that. Yep. And so that's kind of part of what we're doing with the product there. And, you know, helping you game plan and then making sure that there's a kind of single source of truth of all those things that you actually documented and decided upon and assigned to people all in one area that just attaches directly to your calendar. So there's no kind of hunting down like what actually was decided. It's like, you know, like if you had a meeting last week for your marketing team, you just go to the marketing team meeting on your calendar, open it up, and there's your kind of the workspace that was automatically created for you for that. And so, yeah, that's exactly what we're trying to solve for there.
Yeah. I love that. I mean, I used to spend, I don't spend as much time anymore just because I'm not doing a ton of calls, but, and we try to like have no meetings internally like ever, but that totally. Obviously that changes as you get bigger. You sort of have to kind of do some of that stuff, but
yeah, I think you go like companies that are like 25 people to, you know, 10,000 people or more or whatever are the ones that really are kind of the sweet spot there. You know, the two person companies where like I turn around and I just say, hey, Ben, what do you think of this? Like, you know, we're not actually the target customer. It's like
our meeting happened. Says, don't bug me. I'm writing code right now. That's what I get from Kyle all the time. Don't bug me. Or I'll like type him something on Slack and he's like, we almost never like we don't talk to each other on Slack. That's like a last case scenario. It's all done in Notion, but every once in a while, my old like sales self will come back and I like write him something like short on Slack and I'll immediately see the little like icon go to like, what is it, like sleep or snoozed or whatever. And I'm like, oh,
you're like, I know, like, you're there.
That's like worse than him even like writing back and be like, hey dude, don't, it's like just a little snooze button. But anyways, no, I love that. I used to like on the sales side, I used to spend so much time after a meeting, I'm pulling together my thoughts, my notes, all that kind of stuff. And then writing this long email where I essentially play like project manager where, you know, cause I'm trying to get this done prior to, you know, the end of by this quarter, right? I'm trying to hit a number, like all this stuff. So I'm trying to really like project manage and lay out all the, you know, to-dos, things that need to be done, things that are already done, who needs to be doing those things, you know, adding note, like all this stuff. So I'd spend like hours on like one email, right? Cause it, and these were like big deals. So it's like you have, it makes sense to spend an hour on an email, but
yeah, you got to get it right.
Exactly. So having this sort of thing would have been super helpful and speeding that process up and making sure I don't drop the ball on anything. Okay. So you've been working on this. And that's sort of how you came up with some of those different ideas. So we talked prior to this. So it sounds like you guys are going like really all in with this new project, new SaaS company. So you're planning to sell Median, right? Or you're at least going and looking to potentially sell Median. Is that the case?
Yeah, we're exploring the option anyway. And so we, like, you know, we've had this product, you know, we taking a step back in the last year, you know, being a bootstrap company, we've had some cool opportunities that came to us where we signed, you know, two, what I would say is like very large perpetual licensing deals, like non-exclusive perpetual licensing deals, which is basically like these companies get like, basically it's like you hand over your code base to them and then, but it's not exclusive. And like, you still own all your customers and all your other revenue. They just have the ability to now kind of like build this into their own product. And then you just kind of tell you to go away. And so we did that at the, you know, kind of middle to end of last year. And, you know, that was really nice for us because then we could kind of take a lot of that money out of the company and, you know, take it personally as dividends and kind of like, you know, solidify what I would say like our personal living situations are.
So why would a company want to do that versus just pay you like pay you guys like a SaaS subscription? Is there like security reasons for that, or like why would they want to build that stuff internally?
Yeah, so there's a couple. You know, one of which is interesting is like there is a need for the technology at some of these larger companies, because the two companies that we did the deals with are both multi-billion-dollar companies, but they're also very conscious of the fact that we're like two guys sitting in, well, one guy, I guess, now sitting in a small office in Omaha, Nebraska. The other one's in his home office. And mm-hmm. it's like, if we just like went away tomorrow, or somebody acquired our company, or we shut down or whatever, that would actually put them in a bad situation if they like they have paying customers using our product. And if we were to go away, that actually is like that's like bad news bears for them. And so so for them, like one of the creative options that we kind of like stumbled into was like, hey, what if instead of you just paying us monthly, you just like owned the code and could build it completely in? Because like these teams have like engineers and like full on teams that can do this. They don't want to spend like, you know, 6-9 months building out the whole product, but they can spend, you know, 2-3 weeks building it into their existing product. Right. And also, you're right, like security and all that stuff is one thing. Cause like, even though we are extremely security conscious, like as a 2-person bootstrap company, we weren't going to spend like 40 grand to become SOC 2 compliant. And then, you know, also the time and effort it takes to do that, because like you have to have auditors come out and like they do all sorts of other crazy stuff. And like when you're having these conversations, like you're like, hey, I know you need this tech and you guys are really interested in it, fits exactly what you want. But like SOC 2 compliance is a big thing for you. And like, just realistically, I'm not going to like, you know, spend 40 grand because you guys might sign a deal with us. We don't have that luxury. And
did you guys pitch this option to them, or did they pitch this option to you? Cause I'm interested, I've never done anything like this, and it would be interesting. Like I could see scenarios where it could be interesting for us to do a deal like this with somebody, and I would love to take some money off the table, but yeah, I'd love to hear like who kind of pitched that.
Both of them, we kind of pushed the envelope on both of them. Like one of them was already an existing customer that, paid us month to month. It was like a larger publicly traded telecommunications company. And they, I don't think I can say the names of either of the companies. I know on one, I definitely can't, cause we have a no press clause, but which is also funny because like they want everyone who's using the product to like make it feel like theirs, which it now is theirs. Like they've probably modified it. They might probably add features and do all the other things that they want. But so we kind of pushed it because like we had kind of explored building some new like products and features that I think were going to be a little more capital intensive upfront. And, you know, I think one of the companies was paying us, you know, like $2,000 or $3,000 a month, which is a nice deal for us for sure. But we were like, you know, it would be nice if we could just, you know, maybe have them buy out the contract or something, and we could just kind of get a larger influx of capital upfront to kind of put towards this new project, which funny enough, we never actually even got around to. So we kind of pushed on it, and we were just like, hey, like, you know, I know you guys had, you know, questions about like the compliance thing and security stuff. And it just looks like we're not going to be able to do that. And we had a good enough relationship where we could kind of talk through and say, you know, we have some kind of interesting ideas for how we would potentially solve for this if you guys would be up for it. And so we kind of pushed the envelope there, especially with the telecommunications firm, they were already having, like, it was already built into their product. Like for them, it was just like, instead of paying us monthly, kind of indefinitely forever, it's like, what if you just paid us one time a larger lump sum and told us to go away? Would you be open for that? And they would be like, yeah, actually that would be better for us, because it would eliminate any possibilities of like, you know, issues down the road, like if your company were to go out of business or to sell to someone else or whatever. Funny enough, right about that same time, the other company had a customer service tool they built completely in-house. They don't buy anything off the shelf. And they had an interest in co-browsing technology, but they didn't have the kind of like know-how internally on like how to do it. And so we were kind of like, hey, like we just did this other deal with this other company. we know that you're not going to buy something off the shelf, but like if we could kind of hand it over and then you guys could just own it and just pay like a one-time upfront fee and we could help with the transition, like, is that something you'd be interested in? And they were. And so we explored that path and sure enough, that worked out too. So I kind of joked, we joked the other day, it's like, maybe we should just like set up a Shopify site that just says like add median code base to cart. And it just has like a large price tag on it. And it just like, yep. And I joke that we need to physically mail them like a thumb drive with code on it, as opposed to like, you know, any like modern methods of sending that stuff over. But yeah. It was kind of like a method that like we didn't realize was an option for selling. We were either like, oh, it's either going to be monthly recurring revenue, or that's basically it. And then we were like, oh, like we can sell one-off big deals if we want, because no one can tell us we can't. And if that's going to help get a deal done that otherwise we either couldn't do or just could be structured better, then let's explore that. And we did. And sure enough, there was appetite for it, at least with a couple of companies. So, it was a learning experience for sure, but it worked out exceptionally well for both Ben and I, and kind of gave us some more, runway to kind of start, this new company and kind of, you know, give us a little more personal liquidity that you know, we didn't have quite as much of before.
Yeah, that's awesome. Did you ever lose a deal trying to pitch that? Because if not, yeah, you probably should just stick with that.
No, but I will tell you, like every time we did it, I'm like, this is bad news. Like I was like in my head, I'm just like doubting that, like this just seems like throwing spaghetti at the wall and see what will stick. And like, I was just like, if they think that we're just going to like, you know, say, hey, give us a bunch of money one time and then like, we're going to go away, like they're going to be offended by that. And so yeah, I was actually scared that we were gonna like lose deals because of that. But the first one, they were already a paying customer and they had a contract signed with us, so they couldn't leave even if they wanted to. So we had a little more bargaining power. But and the second one was just, you know, because we had already kind of done it once, it gave a little more credibility that we weren't just like, I don't know, coming up with random ideas. We just said like, hey, we've done this with this other company. By the way, this is a, you know, like a company you've heard of, and they did it, so you might be interested in it too. And so it worked out. I don't know. I think it was kind of how we positioned it a little bit that definitely helped. But I mean, who knew that was an option, but apparently no, it was.
I've heard of that option when you initially start a business, right? Like I've heard like, hey, I've got this idea. It's like a fairly good way to start a bootstrap business, actually, to say like, hey, I've got this idea to solve this particular problem, and said customer is like really interested in solving that problem. And so you're like, hey, we haven't built anything yet, but like, we'll build this out even like somewhat custom to you guys. Or like, we'll build this for you. Can we keep the, like, can we still own the code? Like, you guys can have this for X price, but like, can we still like own the rights to the code or whatever? And so they'll start a business through that route because it essentially funds their work on it, and then eventually they can go and like now resell that to all these other customers. We're actually I guess it's somewhat similar, although we haven't come up with a like an actual price point for this yet, but we're in the process of potentially doing something like this on the ad reform side. But we haven't come up with a price, but maybe this is good info, because maybe I'll sort of spin it a certain way when we describe it, and I'll call it perpetual licenses. That's very, very fancy way of saying it. I like that.
Yeah, which we didn't know that was a thing, but I joke that it's like the enterprise version of like AppSumo lifetime deals.
Yeah, basically. Have you done AppSumo before?
No, we've explored it. And it would be interesting because I think it's like, I don't think it's a good like, you know, channel for a lot of things other than potentially giving you some decent cash up front. But, you know, if you want to kind of fund a new thing that you're doing, I think it's a viable thing. I haven't really talked to anybody who's done it personally, so I'd be curious kind of the outcome if you were trying to get anything out of it other than say, hey, can we get, you know, 20 to 40K in our bank account to help with something else we're trying to work on. Like is that valuable? But
well, you know, I think it's like
hey, we just need some capital. It seems like a good way to potentially do that.
Yeah, I think it's I've looked into it a little bit. Obviously, they take a big chunk of the revenue that you get from it. Yeah, I think it's, what is it, like 50, 50 or 60% or something.
Yeah, I think I think it's more than, yeah, I want to say it's 60 or something. Anything that's like more than 50, I'm like, wow, that's like,
oh my
God, a hefty finder's fee. But you know,
it's it's worth it if the people that are sort of, if it's the right audience, right? And then also if you sort of historically know that if you get a client, they will increase their revenue over the lifetime as a customer by X amount, then you can sort of do the math and be like, okay, this is worth it. It's like just, it's basically just like having sale, you know, paying salespeople or paying for ads or whatever, just understanding that multiple. And you have to know that like you're going to be able to keep a customer for X amount of years, and that customer is going to grow their business by X amount, or like you would know like the lifetime value of the, of that customer, of a customer, then I think it could start to be worth it. But most, I feel like most companies like us that are, you know, under 3 years old and just like kind of early stage, like I don't think any of you, you don't really know that information yet. Like those metrics aren't super solid yet. So I think it's kind of a risky move. And I think a lot of people are doing it and they probably shouldn't be doing it. But anyways, so how have things been since, you know, how have you guys sort of dealt with COVID? Have you been, you know, sort of hit by it in a difficult way? You know, did you guys get PPP funds? Like what, how's that been going for you guys?
Yeah, we didn't go after the PPP funds, and partially just because we signed those deals at the end of last year that put us in a really good financial situation. I would say mm-hmm. after like kind of like scraping by for like quite a while, that actually like gave us a lot of breathing room finally.
Right.
So we were really lucky, and that all, we timed all that stuff to happen, not on purpose, but because who knew this was going to happen. But that all kind of happened, you know, by October, November of last year. And then we were in a good spot. And then, you know, for us, it's kind of just been business as usual, minus, you know, just being more virtual. So like we used to come into the office every day, and, mm-hmm. you know, I come in here because my wife works from our office at home, and there's no one else in our entire building. And Ben, my co-founder, you know, works from home. But, you know, for us, like the business just kind of keeps running in the background. I was actually able to take a decent amount of time to like help my son with school when their school finally made the decision to kind of cancel for the rest of the year or do like homeschooling for the rest of the year. And so mm-hmm. It gave us, because we had that flexibility, I was able to spend a lot more time with my family mm-hmm. when we kind of needed to flex into kind of different roles than we were used to. Where we just like send the kids to school every day, and then we just like go to work. And then it was like, there's some period of time where it's like, we couldn't do that. And because I had this great flexibility, I was able to do that and do the world's worst job of teaching my son how to do second grade math, because they do it differently now, as we discussed before this. Common Core is different than what I learned apparently. And so
we're so old school.
I know, it's like, I know how to do second grade math, or I thought I did. But apparently according to today's schools, I don't. And so I had to do some, you know, learning there. But yeah, I mean, I think we were in a lucky spot where we just kind of, it stayed pretty consistent, and the business kind of ran in the background. You know, we didn't grow at all, but we didn't really shrink either. So, and then, you know, we had put so much of our focus towards, working on workshop during this, that, it was kind of a good time for us to like start, and just like build something new, because like we didn't worry about like trying to like capture new customers. Like for us, it was like, let's put our heads down and just start building a new thing. Right. And I felt like it was like, you know, a lot of people aren't buying new stuff right now anyway, or like are a little more, you know, cautious with their budgets. And so if we were like, hey, like this is a great time to not worry about that and worry about just like trying to get something out into the world, it kind of align well with like what the current state of things is like, hey, if we're not trying to optimize for revenue right now, let's just optimize for getting something out the door. I think that may work out. You know, we'll actually see, but, so that's kind of where we're at. I mean, we didn't, you know, knock on wood, we were pretty unaffected, and in a pretty good spot, especially compared to a lot of folks who, you know, their businesses or personal lives were very negatively impacted.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I'd imagine like the co-browsing stuff is like pretty like baked into like support teams process or whatever. And it's pretty like, they're not going to just cancel out of nowhere. Like we're a little bit different with ad reform because, you know, the ad industry in general really like basically froze spend completely upon all this stuff starting to happen and things shutting down. It's like, okay, let's, you know, all the marketers at all these big brands basically completely shut the hose off because they don't know what's going to happen and there's uncertainty. And when they shut the hose off, all the the agencies and all these other companies that support them and buy media on behalf of them, or space on these different sites and whatever, they all freeze, right? Because they've got no money coming in. There's nothing happening. So then that trickles down to the SaaS companies that are supporting all these businesses. And so we took a hit, nothing like, you know, any of these restaurants or some of these other businesses like that, of course, but we took a hit and it slowly started to like kind of come back. But yeah, it's an interesting time. It's interesting to see like different businesses and how they kind of take hits from this. But I totally agree. Like it's a great time to start, you know, potentially working on something new, or really spending a lot of time on the product and fixing bugs and different things that were maybe sort of neglected because you got to get those new features out, right? So you sort of neglect these certain things, and now it's like, okay, well, we're not going to be doing as much on the sales side right now, or the marketing side. Maybe we'll work on some things that have been neglected over that time. So we've been working on a lot of those, like bug fixes and different things like that. And then we actually have been. This will be like the first time I say it, but we have been working on some new apps that are, you know, we're fully user feeds fully built on Intercom. So like that's sort of like our little like zone or flywheel, I guess you could say. So we've got some other apps that we are in the process of working on, and hopefully in the next month or so, you'll see at least one of those coming down the pipe. So we're pretty excited.
Oh, that's exciting.
Yeah, it's fun to, and they're all like support related as well. So it's kind of in the same ballpark that you've been playing in. It's just fun to work on. Like I know the Basecamp guys have been working on like Basecamp obviously for so long, and you know obviously they now have just launched Hey and have been working on that. Like it's just fun. It is fun to work on something new, right? Like you get so like you've been working on something for so long, it's fun to like kind of like try something new out and you know, work on fresh ideas. And also sort of like it's good to take a break from some of the things that are probably very I don't know, like after you work on a product for at least a year, you start to like there's things that start to just annoy you about it, or like things that you can't really get past, or you know, walls that you run into, complaints you get about the same things from, you know, customers, and it just sort of like weighs on you. And it's kind of nice to like get away from that and start from like a fresh, like start, you know, from scratch, use the newest technologies, right? The newest version of Rails or like whatever it is, instead of like, oh man, we need to upgrade this or we need to upgrade that. And it, you know, that kind of stuff gets a little bit painful after a while. But I do think after working on something new, it can also like help you to feel like kind of fresh in terms of like coming back to the old thing. But we've definitely felt that with like the user feed adder form, right? It's like we worked on user feed straight for like probably like almost a year without even like touching ad reform. And then all of a sudden we came back to ad reform and it was really exciting to work on some new things there and it felt good. So it's kind of nice to sort of have both of those different things. But
yeah, it definitely feels like it breaks up like the monotony of just working on like that single track focus that you've had for the past however long on a thing, and being able to, you know, in some ways for good or bad, to be able to context switch, like to kind of switch your focus to something else if you're just like really kind of, you know, slightly bored or fed up with something, and then being able to kind of come back when you're ready for it is nice for sure. You know, I'm sure people that are much more focused than I am are better at like the single track mind. Like I'm only going to do this thing for the next like 10 years and be singularly focused on that. If I don't have excitement or enthusiasm completely behind something, it like becomes harder to work on it. And this kind of allows me to whatever thing I'm excited about at that given time to be able to kind of go over to that.
Totally. Yeah. I mean, it's one of those things that I think if you're an entrepreneur, an entrepreneur type, I guess you could say, like, it's very, very hard to not, you know, kind of think about all those other, like, you almost everything that you see, interact with in the world, like, from, like, your kid's school to, like, daycare to, you know, the way that you get your grocery, like, everything, you start thinking of, like, ideas, right? Like, how could I make this better? How's this a software product? How's it? Like, it just start, you know, that kind of stuff just kind of comes up. And it's because of that, because you always see ideas in almost everything, it also it makes you sort of know, like, wow, there's so many different possibilities of things that you can build and things you can work on, that it does make it harder to focus, because it's like you're constantly like, wow, there's all these other things, like we could be working on this thing, could be doing that. And so, you know, it definitely does make it more difficult. And you can't have, like, you know, yeah, 10 different products, but I think it is becoming easier and easier. And like, you see you guys working on this stuff, us doing something similar, to be able to work on a few different SaaS products at the same time, and be able to kind of like jump back and forth to different ones. I do think it's becoming more like, it's something that can be done. Whereas maybe like 5 years ago, that probably wasn't the case for a number of different reasons, like expenses, like things like that. But anyways, this has been a super interesting conversation. I'm glad we finally did this. So, before we jump off, I want to give you the floor. Where can people connect with you, and you know, where can they find your products?
This has been super fun. So I'm glad to have been on, and I've been listening for a long time. So I'm excited to be on. The you can find me on Twitter. I'm at dhoman, dhoman, and then you can find Median at hellomedian, MEDIAN.com, and then you can find our new project workshop at useworkshop.com.
Awesome, and we will post links to all those different things in the show notes. Well, I guess that's a wrap. Great talking to you, Derek.
Awesome. Thanks for having me on.